You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and Happy New Year. I hope everyone had a joyous Christmas season and enjoyed their new year. I know I had a very good one. I was able to, my fiance and I went out to the ranch we bought in East Texas, and I had some of my children came in. My oldest son is still in Afghanistan, but my youngest boy, the Black Hawk pilot, he and his wife came over from Ruston, Louisiana, and she's about to present me with my first grandchild. It was in the spring. And then we had my daughter, Nicole, came in from Dallas. We had her there. And then we had friends on Christmas Day and family on Christmas Eve, so it was very nice. And I hope everyone enjoyed their holidays. And now we get back to the reality of the Obama administration and what's happening with our Constitution. And it just keeps getting worse. Back in June of last year, June 25th specifically, I posted an article on my blog titled "Psychiatry is a Weapon of Tyranny." And in that article, I pointed out that the history behind using an ever-broadening definition of mental illness as a way to disarm and ultimately imprison the potential enemies of dictators throughout history. And this has been used by the Nazis in Germany. It's been used by Stalin in the Soviet Union. It's been used by Mao Zedong and the leaders of communist China. It's been used by Fidel Castro. It's right out of the dictator's playbook, let's put it that way, a playbook which I think Obama has memorized at this point. Because I also pointed out in that article that this technique was being used already against American military veterans. And we are continuing at the United States Justice Foundation to pursue legal remedies for this on behalf of our veterans, because they're being hammered. We're getting more and more horror stories on a weekly basis. Then I mentioned in that article that with the IRS now having access to the medical records of all Americans, that this type of action, broadening the definition of mental illness in order to disarm people, was going to be used against everybody in the population, not just against veterans. I was unfortunately proven to be correct by Obama on the first of the year, January 1st, issued executive orders, something he's very fond of doing, and which are, for the most part, illegal and unconstitutional. But he has issued two new executive orders that basically codify the predictions I made into law. Basically, what he's done is he has exempted the states from federal law, the federal law that requires a right to privacy when it comes to medical records. Right now, under the federal law, if you go to a hospital, that hospital cannot turn over your records to anybody else without your permission. And the states don't have access to those records, or if they do have access to them, for example, if it's a public hospital, then they are not supposed to turn those records over to anybody else without your permission. This is federal law. This was a law passed by Congress. We know how Obama feels about laws passed by Congress. He believes that he can do whatever he wants with them. He can ignore them. He can change them. He can amend them. He can basically throw them out. Well, that's what he's done with this part of the so-called HIPAA law. He has basically said that in this executive order that states do not have to comply with federal law, that they can and should turn over information about your medical history and my medical history to the FBI. And what they want them to turn over is if you have not just been treated for mental illness, not just been put in the hospital for mental illness, but basically the way they've worded this, they can turn over, and of course they're claiming this is not true, but you read the executive orders and you find out what is true and what's not. Basically what they're saying is that if you have ever gone to a doctor and told that doctor you were depressed about something. If you have ever had medication for depression, even for a short period of time, if you have ever suffered from PTSD because you had, say you were in an automobile accident and you had some post-traumatic stress disorder, or you lost a family member suddenly and had PTSD, all of that information will go to the FBI. And on that basis alone, you will be put on the list of people who cannot purchase firearms in this country. You will be put on the NICS list. And you very, very well get a letter from the federal government saying that not only can you cannot purchase these firearms, you can't even own any firearms you already have, that you have to turn them in. And if you think this is not happening, it's happening already in California and New York, where they're using similar information in getting violation of federal law. They're taking information about the medications you may have had at some time in your life. For example, if you had ADD as a child and you took medications for that, that disqualifies you in the state of New York from owning a firearm. In California, they're kicking down doors to confiscate firearms from people who have never been adjudicated to be mentally ill, never been found to be a danger to themselves or others, but have simply, at some point in their life, suffered from depression for whatever reason, or at some point in their life have had PTSD, or even just been to a doctor to get medication to help them sleep because of anxiety. They are broadening the definition of mental illness to include things that do not belong in the definition and are not in the definition. The doctors don't define insomnia as mental illness. But under what's happening with the federal government in states like California and New York, if you take medication for insomnia, they're going to classify you as being incompetent and ineligible to own a firearm. The fact of the matter is that the law requires for you to go on the NICS list that you either be a convicted felon, a known drug user, or be adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to yourself or others. That word adjudicated is real important because it's also been redefined now by the Obama administration. Adjudication means legally that there has to be a formal hearing, that they have to go before a judge or an administrative judge at least and prove that you are mentally ill. And you have a right to defend yourself. The burden of proof is supposed to be on whoever is claiming you're mentally ill, whether that's a relative or whether that's a state, a local district attorney, it doesn't matter. The burden of proof is on them. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it's supposed to work. Now they're rewriting that. The Attorney General of the United States has come out and said that anybody, basically, can adjudicate your mental state. It can be a board or a commission, but it still has to be an adjudication process. Well, now, the Obama administration has instructed the VA, and I'm sure other federal agencies are going to get the same instructions, that anybody who works for that department, anybody who works for the Veterans Administration, that is appointed by the VA to adjudicate, to decide if people are mentally ill, they can do that. Here's what's happening in the VA. We know this. We have heard this from many members of the military veterans out there. What they're doing is these files are being turned over to outside contractors. Not psychologists, not psychiatrists, just they're told, take this file and determine if this person is incompetent. Because once you're incompetent by VA standards, and that can be, you can be declared incompetent if you allow your spouse to panel the payments of the bills for the family. So what they're doing is they're turning this over to these independent contractors who mostly work at home and therefore unsupervised, they never talk to the veteran. We never interview them. They don't know anything about them except what's in the file. If they see in the file that sometime 10, 15 years ago, you're a veteran, you went to the VA, and you said you were depressed, then they will say you are incompetent and therefore cannot own a firearm. If you appeal, the burden of proof is on you to prove the VA is wrong. That is a violation of the Constitution. That is a violation of the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, which says the government cannot take away your life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Certainly they're taking away your liberty and your property by saying that you cannot own a firearm. Yet this is being done on a regular basis, and now all indications are that the adjudication process is going to be made similar. Well, I say adjudication process. It's not adjudication. It doesn't fit the legal definition. It's a bureaucratic determination that you should be denied your Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms. They're going to be doing this all over the country. They're going to be doing this if you receive Social Security benefits, if you receive SSA benefits, if you receive any kind of federal benefits or contracts, for example. They can declare you mentally ill or incompetent. Again, you don't have to be declared mentally ill. Being unable to pay your bills on time because you forget or something like that does not make you mentally ill. Until now. Now that's part of the definition. So if you forget to pay your bills sometimes, they can declare you mentally ill. If you have your spouse paying the bills for you, they can declare you mentally ill. In one case that we're handling, a woman whose husband was killed in Vietnam has been receiving VA benefits for years. They asked her at the VA one time, how do you handle paying your bills? And she said, it's easy. Everything is automated. All of my bills bill payments come out of my checking account every month. I've seen the letter, ladies and gentlemen, they sent to her, basically saying that on that basis and that basis alone, she is incompetent to handle her own affairs. She has now been put on the list of people that cannot legally purchase firearms in this country. The constitutional implications of all this are obvious and rampant. First of all, Obama has violated both Article 1 and Article 2 of the Constitution that establish the balance of powers existing between the Congress and the executive branch of government. Under Article 1, the Congress has exclusive power to pass laws, and Article 2 requires the executive branch, the president, to enforce those laws. That's not what's happening, and we'll talk more after the break.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
The Article 2, like I said, requires the executive branch of government, the president, to enforce the laws passed by Congress. The president is routinely violating these provisions. He chooses which laws to enforce. He amends existing laws without congressional approval, and he makes new laws. That's exactly what he's doing in the gun control situation. The fact of the matter is, the Second Amendment, as far as I'm concerned, all the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, everything contained in the Bill of Rights, is not subject to being changed by Congress, and certainly not subject to being changed by the President. The reason being is that the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and if you've read my booklet on the Constitution, you'll have read the preamble. Most people don't even know there is a preamble to the Bill of Rights. Everybody, a lot of us in school, back in the old days at least, had to learn the preamble to the Constitution. But nobody ever talked about the preamble to the Bill of Rights. Well, the preamble to the Bill of Rights basically says that it's a warning to the federal government. It's saying that these rights enumerated in the first 10 amendments to the Constitution are not rights granted to us, the people, by the federal government, but they are inherent rights that belong to us and were granted to us by our Creator. In other words, they're telling the federal government in the preamble, you can't mess with these rights. You didn't give them to us, therefore you cannot take them away. You cannot alter them. I personally do not believe that the Congress even intended, or the Continental Congress, the convention that drew up the Constitution, that neither of them intended for the Bill of Rights to be able to be amended by normal procedures in the Constitution. I don't think they're subject to the amendment process. If you'll notice, there has never really been an effort to amend those rights, the Bill of Rights. So what we have here is a situation where Obama is saying, I'm going to change not only federal law regarding rights of privacy, I'm going to change the Second Amendment to the Constitution. I'm going to ignore the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States has twice ruled that the Second Amendment provides for individual right to keep and bear arms. And we had a courageous federal judge in Chicago just a couple of days ago make the same ruling, that Chicago law outlawing the sales of firearms in the city of Chicago was unconstitutional. It violated the Second Amendment. Obama didn't care about that. He's going to write his own laws. He's going to do it and amend federal law. He's going to change the Second Amendment all to do what he wants to do, and that is disarm the American people. The clear purpose of disarming the American people is because Obama considers himself to be a dictator and wants to consolidate his power as a dictator without worrying about the fact that there are millions of Americans out there who have firearms and who might be willing to resist him, would be willing to resist him, particularly among the 21 million veterans that we have in this country. So he's making up things as he goes along. And we now are in a position where everyone's right to keep and bear arms is going to be under attack. He's going to be doing this through more executive orders. But he's denying rights to veterans, to all Americans, rights that are God-given to us, rights that we have enumerated in the Constitution. But he's going to take it a step further. And there's been a very ominous development in the last couple of weeks, or the last couple of months, since Obama had John Kerry sign the United Nations Small Arms treaty. Under the Constitution, it is clear that in order for a treaty to go into effect in this country and become the law of the land, it has to be first signed by the president or his representative, and then ratified by a two-thirds vote of the United States Senate. As of right now, there are at least 54 U.S. senators who said they would not vote to ratify the U.N. Small Arms Treaty. They said this before it was ever signed. That means that it's not anywhere close to having two-thirds majority that is needed to ratify that treaty. There was just too much in that treaty that indicates that it was designed to disarm the American people. It was designed to hurt us, to take away our Second Amendment rights, that it had nothing to do with preventing crime or terrorism, that it was designed to disarm the honest citizens of the United States. That was what was clear. That's why so many senators have come out and opposed it. Obama, if you'll notice, has not brought the treaty to the Senate. It's his duty, once he signs a treaty, to send it over to the Senate for ratification. He has not done that. There is no indication he plans to do that. But here's what the Justice Department under Eric Holder has come out and said. They are saying now that the treaty is the supreme law of the land, that it is in full force and can be enforced in the United States without Senate ratification. And the only way it cannot be enforced is if the Senate comes in and votes to set it aside. That's ridiculous. That's not what the Constitution says. That's not what the courts have said. That's not what the law says. So again, we have the Obama administration rewriting the Constitution of the United States, or finding out ways it thinks that it can ignore it, changing our laws, attacking the citizens of the United States, attacking our rights under the Constitution, our individual rights. And there's hardly a peep out of anybody. How exactly is Obama going to enforce this treaty? Are we going to have Interpol agents coming in kicking down our doors? Is he going to import foreign troops? Is he going to order the American military to do what it is not allowed to do under the Constitution, and that's enforce laws in this country to arrest people? I mean, he's already had the Congress give him the authority of the National Defense Authorization Act for him to order the military to arrest and detain American citizens without probable cause, without trial, without having an attorney appointed to represent them. They can be arrested and detained indefinitely. That's why some states have come out and said that they will not allow the National Defense Authorization Act to be enforced in their states. You have a runaway administration, and we don't know what he may do next. We don't know what he may use to try to implement and enforce the Small Arms Treaty. Understand this. The Supreme Court of the United States in 1957 ruled specifically that no treaty, even signed by the president and even ratified by the United States Senate, that no treaty superseded the constitutional protections of individual rights in this country. They could not take away a person's right to a speedy trial. They could not take away the person's right to keep and bear arms, the right to due process, the right to be free from illegal searches and seizures, the right to freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. None of that can be taken away by an international treaty, even if the Senate ratifies it by a two-thirds majority. That's what the Supreme Court said. But again, we have Obama. We know how he feels about the Supreme Court. He ignores Supreme Court and other federal court orders in the past. So at this point, we don't know what he may do as far as the U.N. Small Arms Treaty goes. One of the things we're looking at in the United States Justice Foundation right now is ways to block any enforcement of the U.N. Small Arms Treaty in this country. And that will require some immediate litigation. And by the way, we've upgraded our website and are working on an all-new website. But in the meantime, if you want to visit our website and find out what's going on, you go to usjf.net. That's the United States Justice Foundation, initials usjf.net. And you can look at what's happening with us and with the litigation we're currently involved in. And there's quite a bit of it, and there's going to be quite a bit more. But we're monitoring very carefully what's happening with this UN Small Arms Treaty, because it's of great concern to us, and certainly it's a concern to us what's happening to our veterans and what's happening to other people in this country who are being declared mentally defective or incompetent or mentally ill or however you want to put it, and losing their Second Amendment rights. And by the way, we've got some indication from some veterans out there that not only are they being denied their Second Amendment rights, but they are also being put on the no-fly list, in other words, being classified as terrorists or potential terrorists because they've been deemed incompetent to handle their own affairs by the VA. They're having their passports canceled if they have some. We're also being told that family members of veterans who have been declared incompetent are being told, since you live with a veteran who cannot own firearms, you cannot own firearms. So you see how this is going to work? They go after veterans first, exactly the way they did it in Nazi Germany, exactly what Adolf Hitler did. When he wanted to disarm the German people, the first people he wanted to disarm were the veterans, because they, like our veterans in this country, had taken an oath of office to protect the Constitution and of Germany, to protect their country, not to protect an individual who might be ruling our country. So we had this step taken in Germany, and now it's being taken in the United States. Disarm the veterans first. Well, how do you extend that? Well, obviously, you do what I just said they seem to be doing, and that is tell the family members of the veterans they can't own firearms either. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal, but say, since when does Obama care about things like that? Then you go after the non-veterans and their families. Say you have somebody on Social Security, and they declare him or her incompetent to handle their own Social Security payments. Then they put them on the list of people that cannot purchase firearms, and they tell them you cannot even own firearms. And then they extend that out to their children. Now, supposedly this is happening if you live with a veteran or you live with somebody who's been declared incompetent. But how long is it going to take them to start extending it to all members of the family? So they can say, well, you know, you have a father who has been declared incompetent and cannot purchase a firearm or own a firearm. Yet you, even though you don't live with him, own a firearm, and therefore he has access to firearms through you, and therefore we are going to disarm you. Think about that, and we'll talk more after the break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dave Smith. Listen every Monday to America's Web Radio, The American Dream. my past background with healthcare, being president of insurance companies. We'll keep you informed on healthcare and other topics that's going on in Washington and around this great country. American Dream, 10 a.m., America's Web Radio.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona Immigration Law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, think about this now. Is it sounding more and more like a runaway train? That one extension after another into the of unlawful acts by the Obama administration, violating the Constitution, taking away our right to keep and bear arms, taking away our freedom of speech, attacking our freedom of religion, specifically attacking our Judeo-Christian heritage, fighting for the rights of radical homosexuals, fighting for the protection of radical Islam in this country. I had a briefing recently on the situation with the Muslim Brotherhood. And right now the Muslim Brotherhood basically owns Obama. We have administration officials coming out and saying this is a moderate form of Islam. These are not radicals of the Muslim Brotherhood or moderates. They are the ones that formed Hamas. Al-Qaeda emerged from a wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. They have said publicly that they want to take over the world and impose Sharia law on the rest of the world. That they want to destroy Israel, destroy the United States, destroy Western Europe. Yet these are the people that are being supported by our president and by our government. Another indication of the lawlessness that we have in this administration. I wrote another article on my blog recently called Betraying Our Own. And there I talked about what is happening to the veterans in this country. And I want to go back to that a bit because this is something becoming a major effort by the United States Justice Foundation and by me, because I am a veteran and I have two sons currently serving in the military. I have two other sons who are veterans, one of which we lost about 2 years ago. And he was a veteran and he died of a rare muscular disease. But I also was a commander of American Legion Post in Carrollton, Texas for 2 years. And I had a number of wonderful veterans from all branches of the military in that post, and are still in that post. So protecting our veterans is something extremely important to me. Yet they are being betrayed on a virtual daily basis by our own government. You have to understand who a veteran is. We took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. We wrote a blank check to our country and to our fellow Americans, pledging that we would give our all, up to and including our lives, to defend the American way of life and to defend our countrymen. This blank check has been readily accepted by our government and by other Americans. And they send members of our military off to die for this nation and for our freedoms. Many of them have made the ultimate sacrifice, many members of the military. Many have come back shattered physically, in some cases mentally. by what's happened to them in combat. Those are disabled veterans. The veterans who returned from combat in World War II were hailed as heroes. And they rightly should have been, because they were. They were the greatest generation. They had accomplished something remarkable. They fought a war on two fronts and defeated powerful enemies. Americans who served in Vietnam, my generation, were not treated that way. We were spit on. We were defiled. We were told we were baby killers. Now we have a new generation of veterans, and they are being treated much better, at least by the American people. The children in the schools are still being taught on Vietnam about the Vietnam War, though. They're being taught that we lost the war. And when I say we, I was talking about the American military, that we lost the war in Vietnam. That's a blatant lie. We, in fact, never lost a battle in Vietnam. Vietnam was lost because the Congress ultimately cut off the funding to the South Vietnamese Army, and after we had pulled out, they were holding their own. They had stopped the North cold, and the Congress cut off their funding to make sure the North was able to come in and take them over. That's the way our schools treat Vietnam veterans. But like I said, the American public, for the most part, is treating our returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan and the war there much better. But our government's not doing that. And in this article, Betraying Our Heroes, or Betraying Our Own, I point out a number of things. Number one, the Department of Homeland Security issued a bulletin to all police agencies in 2009 naming all military veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan as potential domestic terrorists. You come home from fighting for your country, and your country labels you a potential domestic terrorist. Why? Because you've taken that oath of office, you've been in combat, you've been trained to fight, so they assume that you might be a domestic terrorist, meaning that you would oppose Barack Hussein Obama and the Muslim Brotherhood, his friends, and people like Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, who are willing to betray their country and to betray our freedoms and destroy our Constitution. So under that definition, I guess I am definitely a potential domestic terrorist, because I will resist tyranny in this country, regardless of who it's coming from. Then you have Senator Dianne Feinstein, who I think is really the village idiot of the United States Senate. Well, I don't know. Her and Barbara Boxer really run a tight race to be who would be classified as the true village idiot of the United States Senate. But Feinstein declared, when she was pushing her gun control legislation, she declared that all veterans have PTSD and are therefore mentally ill and should not be allowed to own firearms. She went on to say that PTSD had really started in the Iraq War, but apparently it had never existed before. Well, what's classified as PTSD used to be called, many years ago, combat fatigue or being shell-shocked. And PTSD was being diagnosed as such during the Vietnam War. This woman is so stupid that she doesn't even know what she's talking about when it comes to PTSD. But she comes forward and says all veterans have PTSD, and therefore all of us must be disarmed. But in 2009, the Veterans Administration began declaring veterans with physical disabilities, minor PTSDs, past depression, or even those who allow their spouses to pay the family bills as mental defectives, incompetent to handle their own financial affairs, and forbidding these veterans from owning firearms. In the meantime, Obama has unilaterally cut billions of dollars from our defense budget, setting our active duty military personnel up to be killed for no reason at all, putting America in a position of being virtually defenseless against some types of attack, and putting our troops at risk. Bob Gates, the former Secretary of Defense under both George Bush, George W. Bush, and then under Obama for several years, has written a scathing book about Obama and points out that Obama committed American soldiers to a surge in Afghanistan, not believing it would work, didn't care if it worked, put American lives at risk. He did not believe in the strategy. He did not believe we could win in Afghanistan. He pulled us out of Iraq, knowing full well that it would degenerate into chaos, which it's doing. He put rules of engagement on American soldiers, which left them defenseless, because they could be attacked by the enemy at any time. And American lives were lost. This was all done for politics. This was all done to placate his friends on the left, to get himself reelected. He's cost American lives and American lives. Then we have Congress passing the sequestration, which I said at the time was not going to happen. Or I didn't say the sequestration wasn't going to happen. They remember the scenario there. They couldn't reach a deal on the budget agreement on raising the debt limit. So they decided to set up $600 billion in sequestration, money that would be automatically removed from the budgets of various departments of the government, primarily from the Defense Department. And they appointed, to stop this from happening, they appointed six Republicans and six Democrats from both houses to reach a deal. Well, I said at the beginning that it wasn't going to happen, that there was going to be no deal reached. It wasn't. So sequestration kicked in, and the people that were mostly affected were veterans and members of the active military. Then we have the recent debacle of the shutdown of the government. Well, the government was shut down basically on the orders from the Obama administration. And I say the government was shut down, I'm talking primarily about in things that happened in the military. Our monuments were shut down. World War II monument was closed. It's an outdoor monument. It's not guarded. Yet there were barricades put up to keep our veterans, World War II veterans, from going in there. We had a lot of veterans, a lot of people on military bases, losing certain benefits. And we'll talk more about that after this final break.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
Hi, everybody. It's Don Zabkar, your host for Who Knew? We air Mondays 2 to 3 on America's Web Radio, and then occasionally throughout the week. We've got some great subjects. This administration or this regime, as you know, is providing us with great material. So stay tuned. Check us out. America's Web Radio, it's Who Knew with Don Zabkar.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Now we have the Obama administration and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, who, by the way, is a veteran and I think is one of the people betraying his own more than anybody else, except maybe Obama. And Obama, of course, is not a veteran. But we have Chuck Hagel saying there are going to be more and more cuts now made to the military because of the sequestration. They're talking about doing things, cutting military benefits to our veterans, cutting their pay, stopping pay raises to active duty military, and doing away with things like commissaries. Now, for those of you who have not been in the military, you may not know what a commissary is. Because military pay has historically been much lower than comparable civilian pay, things were set up to help the military families, such as commissaries. And these are basically grocery stores. Just like any grocery store, Albertsons, Kroger's, any place you go to buy groceries in civilian life, these commissaries are set up. But they buy the food in bulk and they sell it at cost or less. On the average, families who buy their food at a military commissary save 30% over what they would pay in the civilian world. These have been around for many, many years. They are very important to military families. I can remember when I was on active duty, they were very important to me and my wife. Excuse me. And now Hagel is saying they're going to cut out commissaries in the United States, at all bases in this country. That not only strikes at the budgets of military families by making them buy their groceries at the same price as they would as civilians, but here's another catch-22 there. Many military spouses supplement the family income by working at these commissaries. Thousands of these people are going to lose their jobs. So not only are their benefits going to be cut for the men and women on active duty in the military, but their spouses are going to lose their jobs. So it's another whammy, another hammering of the military by the Obama administration. Then you have something that has occurred or been occurring recently, which again comes out of the Adolf Hitler playbook. And, you know, people get mad at me for comparing Obama to Adolf Hitler, but, you know, the comparisons are there. Read history. That's all you have to do. I pointed out repeatedly in speeches and other things on this show that when Adolf Hitler was elected Chancellor of Germany, he wanted to consolidate his power and make himself a dictator. The first thing he did was to take over and nationalize the health care system. He felt like if I can control access to health care, I can control the people. And to a great extent, that worked. The second thing he did was to disarm the German population. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, he did that by starting with the veterans, who he feared the most. The third thing he did was to start purging the German military of officers, particularly high-ranking officers, and even high-ranking enlisted personnel, who were not personally loyal to Adolf Hitler. These were the men who had taken an oath of office, very similar to the one we take in the United States, to protect and defend their constitution of Germany, to protect their country, to protect their fellow citizens, not to protect a chancellor or a president or a member of the German parliament, the Reichstag. This was not who they were sworn to protect. So Hitler started removing them, purging them from the military, using whatever pretense he could find. Exactly the same thing is happening right now in our military. High-ranking officers are being purged from the military. Two that concern me the greatest were the commander and the deputy commander in charge of our nuclear weapons systems. They both were removed within a couple of weeks of each other. How ominous is that? No, they weren't charged with doing anything wrong. They weren't court-martialed. They were removed because Obama had lack of confidence in them, was the official word that came out. Lack of confidence. In other words, Obama can't trust them to be his loyal minions. Why does he want to control the nuclear weapons in this country? That's something for us to seriously think about. And last but not least, the Obama administration has launched an all-out attack on the very foundation of our military success in this country, the profound religious belief that the vast majority of the members of the military have. They believe in God. They believe in a higher power. They believe that they are fighting not only for our country, but for our God. Obama hates that idea. He utterly despises it. You can fight for Allah. That's fine with Obama. You can commit atrocities in the name of Allah, and that's fine with Obama. But if you're a member of the United States military, don't you dare mention Jesus Christ. Or don't you talk to your fellow military members, or anybody else for that matter, about your beliefs. Don't have a Bible sitting on your desk at work. You can be court-martialed for that. Don't mention Merry Christmas. Don't say that to your fellow soldiers or sailors or Marines. And as far as veterans, here in Dallas, Texas, at the Dallas VA hospital, Christmas cards that were prepared by local school children and sent to the veterans at the hospital were censored by the VA. And they've admitted to this. This is not something I'm making up. They were censored by the VA. All Christmas cards that contain the words Merry Christmas or mention God, saying something like God bless you, were not given to the veterans because they thought it would be politically incorrect and it might offend some veteran who was not a Christian or did not celebrate Christmas. They don't care about offending the hundreds of veterans who do believe in God and do celebrate Christmas. They're worried about offending them and denying them something that means a lot to those people, particularly the ones who have no family to celebrate with, to get a Christmas card saying Merry Christmas and God bless you. The Obama administration stopped that from happening. How callous, how uncaring, how unfeeling, how corrupt can you be? That's the President of the United States. That's his minions in the VA, in the military. If I sound angry, it's because I am. Because I think that was one of the things that almost broke the camel's back, literally, was when I heard about the VA denying Christmas cards to wounded and disabled veterans. And by the way, those same wounded and disabled veterans are going to be losing some of their benefits to the Obama administration cuts. Why not? He's shown his utter disdain for the military in this country. When the man was a United States Senator and the war in Iraq was going on, he voted against providing improved body armor to our soldiers. He voted against providing better armament to the Humvees that they were driving in and to their other vehicles. He voted against all that. Why? Well, I mean, we were fighting radical Islam. We were fighting the Sunnis. Maybe you can figure out which side he's on. He's beginning to look to me like he's not on the side of the American people. Certainly not on the side of our military and our veterans. By the way, speaking of veterans, I want to thank everybody again but for continuing to have The Mortarman, my book about my dad's unit during World War II. That's M-O-R-T-A-R-M-E-N, The Mortarman. It's continued to be a top seller on Amazon as an e-book. And by the way, we've just gone in the third printing of my booklet on the Constitution, Our Constitution. So if you want to order copies of that, go to www.constitution.jigsy.com. And you can order copies of the booklet. Like I said, it's in third printing. Now we are very pleased with the response we're getting. It details the entire Constitution and has my comments about what each article, section, and amendment really means. And you can go to my personal website, my blog, at Michael Connelly, C-O-N-N-E-L-L-Y.jigsy.com, at C-O-N-N-E-L-L-Y.jigsy.com. You can read my blog. You can send me comments about it. You can also look at the other books I've written out there and find out how to order them. Thank you for having me in your homes and cars and offices again today. And I hope everybody again has a happy new year. And I look forward to continuing to keep you informed this year and for all of us continuing to fight to save our nation. God bless. Talk to you next week.